Hey, I'm Maddie Mahon, producer and host of Minnesota Next, the show that tries to tackle big issues for young people, millennials specifically, and asks how those big issues are going to shape our lives in the next 5, 10, 20 years, not to mention how they're going to shape the future of our state. Today we're going to do something a little different and focus on one issue specifically from the viewpoint of young millennial women. We're going to ask what it means to be a feminist for millennials today, and how the feminist movement might change in the next 10 or 20 years, and how that will affect all of us in our working lives, in our personal lives, and in the state. Stay tuned. I'm here today with Jamie Millard. She has a number of titles. She's a woman about town, the co-executive director of Pollen, the co-founder of Paper Darts, and the board chair for the Young Nonprofit Professional Network, right?
That's right. I like to say that I wear many different lipsticks.
Well, so today we're going to talk about feminism.
Yes.
Which, you know, isn't exactly, I guess, the guiding principle of Pollen, but something that I think sort of touches on all of these aspects of things. And you know, there's so many things to cover. When I was prepping for this interview, I was like, oh my God, I could talk for 8 hours about this topic. There's so many different things. But I sort of wanted to start out by having you recount this anecdote. When we spoke on the phone, I'm going to pull back the veil. We have met before, not met on the phone. We spoke on the phone about this interview, and you told me about a conversation between you and your mom.
Yeah. Well, I told my mom that you had reached out and said, you know, can we have this conversation about feminism? And she said, you don't want to do that. You do not want to go and be on the record as having anything to be associated with feminism, because it's a bad word. People are going to think of you as a man hater, as a bra burner. And I said, really? You know, I don't know, Mom. I think of it as connotations of equality and strength, and I have a different notion of it than she does. And I wasn't raised with her ever talking about feminism in that way. We never talked about it growing up. And so I think that it was really interesting to hear that perspective from her. And I was like, well, I'm going to do it. And she's like, okay. I think she's worried right now that my career is in jeopardy, that I'm
here
talking about it.
This is it. It ends now on Minnesota Next.
Yeah. And I've been talking to my friends about it since, and they will say things like, yeah, I see where your mom's coming from. You know, I'll say things like, I'm not a feminist, but...
Right.
X, Y, Z, and all these things. So there's this fear of radicalism, man-hating, associated with the term. And for whatever reason, and I have a theory about why I don't have that context or association with that word. I definitely am a feminist. I wear that proudly. I work in very, it seeps into all my work, whether it's Pollen, Paper Darts, or YNPN. And so... Yeah, I don't know. It's strange.
I think that this, I love that story, because I think it sort of flips the script on what I've come to think about in terms of millennial and feminism, right? So I grew up with a mother who was very much a feminist. We talked a lot about women's rights, and she was sort of that generation of women who grew up at a time when feminism was very much part of the cultural discussion. Women's rights was part of the cultural discussion. And I think for many millennials, for young women, they sort of feel like, well, we've already got gender
equality, right?
Like, we've already got it going on, so we don't need to talk about feminism anymore. It doesn't really play a role for us in our day-to-day lives.
I 100% agree. So where I don't have a bad word association with feminism, I had thought of it as being achieved.
Right.
And I think part of that, my mother is she was a senior engineer for Mobil in the Mobil Exxon in the 70s. So she was one of the first pioneering petroleum engineers out on these fields. I have pictures of her wearing bell bottoms and a hard hat, supervising teams of hundreds of men out on oil rigs. And I'm also a fourth generation female college graduate in my family, which is pretty rare and unique.
Right.
And so it's in my own personal context, she didn't have it. You know, she was always seen as, she wasn't seen as an equal, I saw her as an equal growing up to having the same job that many, it's a very male dominated field in the oil industry. And there my mom was as a senior executive in that world. And growing up, I had never experienced any forms of inequality from being a female to a male in classes or getting into college, or I never thought of it as something that always seemed, yeah, we did this. Thanks, right. Thanks, pioneers. Thanks for doing that. Now I get a benefit. And that's definitely changed for me as I've come into the working world and really get to see some of the inequity that still exists.
Yeah. And I feel like in terms of celebrity gossip or in the news, there's always a conversation happening around the term feminism, around mm-hmm. like which women, which celebrity women yeah. are deciding to declare Beyonce. Themselves feminists, mm-hmm. right? And every silly interview, you know, the would you consider yourself a feminist, which to me seems like sort of a ludicrous question. But it seems like the fight has moved really to the label itself. And the issues, the important issues, the things that really matter are kind of taking the back seat. Hmm. It's all about whether or not you want to brand yourself with this kind of, I don't know, fiery label.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think that there's something almost radical in an appealing way that when you do decide to brand, you know, it's like when you do tip yourself, when you go over and you tip into I'm a feminist, you've seen a lot of the positive, I think of it as positive, what's happened with Beyonce or any of these really other outspoken cultural icons, when they do tip that edge and really own the badge of feminism, it seems to have helped them.
Can we talk about Beyonce for a second?
Yes. Let's talk about her all day long.
I'm going to just go off the rails a little bit from where I wanted to go, but I am a Beyonce fan.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
I like,
who isn't?
Right. She's amazing. Like, it's just a crazy spectacle. That's what I like about Beyonce. But the idea of her as a feminist is really an interesting thing, because I think if we take feminism at a base level, the word feminist, it means equal rights, right? It basically means we want men and women to be equal, like politically, socially, economically, which I think most people today are pretty like.
How are you going to argue with that?
Right. Mm-hmm. How are you going to argue with that? Some people will, but I think most people won't. But then there are all these other layers to it. And Beyonce really is sort of this weird enigma, this wrapped up all the issues that we have. She's such a good person to hold up as kind of the conflicts that we have with modern feminism today, right? Like, she's empowered. She clearly makes a lot of money. She's an independent woman.
Yep.
But she also relies a lot on her sexuality.
Yep, and her high heels and her beautiful lipstick.
And being the wife and the Miss Carter to her, right? It's all these things that I think are really playing out for young women, for people our age today.
Yeah, and I think that's where that juxtaposition that happens when you start to explore what it means to be a feminist can be really conflicting for a lot of people. And I find myself going, you know, I've tried very hard to have a certain type of career that I want and to be a young person in a career. And now I find myself also, I'm going to be a mother. I'm due for a baby in February.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. But it opens up these ideas of, you know, balancing these different types of ideologies all into one. You can't, radical feminism doesn't always look like being this career woman who also says no to family and to being a wife and to her beautiful lipstick and her high heels. And Roxane Gay, one of my favorite.
I love Roxane Gay. I love
and
Roxane
Gay. This idea of being a bad feminist or something, I think, is much more in line with where millennials and kind of this new idea of what it means to be, to seek equality. And sometimes that means we, as awful it is to admit, that we want to listen to Blurred Lines while we're driving to work or something. So,
right. And me listening to Blurred Lines or me wanting to put on a dress doesn't make me not a feminist.
Absolutely. And so I think that's, I always, you know, for there's certain days I have a meeting and I'm like, that's going to be the day I wear my hot pink blazer, because I know I have to go into a board meeting and I want to represent this whole picture of who I am and not just all business, or it's very intentional, these little decisions.
Right, but so that's interesting, because that's intentional. So that's saying that it is something you still think about, whereas the piece with millennials is something we don't have to think about anymore. But that's just not true.
It's not true.
Right.
Give millennials more credit. No, absolutely not true. And, you know, maybe I think I've been in being a millennial young and in some higher leadership roles early in life have made it so that I see some of that inequity in a way that I hadn't before, and now that I've been in these executive roles, it's made me more intentional, whereas I didn't have that perspective. And I don't know how many, it can be hard to have that perspective without being confronted with it, you know, being in boardrooms that are very male dominated and I was working in the advertising industry before, and being in some of these industries where you have, and even in the nonprofit sector, you have a large part of the workforce is female,
right?
And a large part of the executives and the boards leading these industries are all male. And so you start to realize that these inequities exist and that you need to be intentional with decisions that you're making and how you're showing up when you're in front of those communities.
Do you think that that is sort of the biggest place that millennial women really have to think about their gender, like on a daily mm-hmm. level? Like that work represents the biggest space where we mm-hmm. have to think about feminism or think about equal rights or equality.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you need to think about when you're in your work setting, how you are showing up and how other people are being treated based on their gender and who's speaking in a room, who has a voice in a discussion. And there's lots of little nuances at play, whether it's gender equality or it's racial equality. I mean, even within gender, there's so many nuances to trying to tame. Gender is a beautiful and ugly thing, and trying to pit it even as male and female isn't fair. And so there's lots of nuances that in the workplace we have to be really mindful of how we're showing up, how are we treating others, what is our awareness level at all time to make sure that we are reaching a place that's more equitable, more voices are being heard and shared, and that space is made available. I think that it's really hard as a young person to navigate that, or to, you don't even know, you don't have a frame of context for what's the unspoken, what's happening in the silence. And so I think that that's something that I've been really trying to discover about myself, and how do I get better at, I'm on this one task force, and there's other CEOs and really high level smart people on this task force. And I have to force myself, okay, Jamie, just say one thing during this meeting.
Yeah.
Just say one thing. And it's so easy for some of these other male personalities in the room to talk and hold that space and hold the conversation. And it's, I don't know for me if it's because I'm female or if it's because I'm young. I don't know which one of those identities is at play, making it difficult for me to inject and not feel like I have to be asked for my opinion.
Yeah. Thinking about the young versus the female thing, because I sort of automatically assume it's because you're a woman, because I feel that way sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the office is especially a hard place to navigate, because there are a lot of connotations with a woman being sort of bossy or loud mm-hmm. in a meeting or taking up space. You're seen as, where I think a young man might be seen as sort of like a striver and a go-getter.
Yeah,
you're seen as bossy mm-hmm. or someone who doesn't want to cooperate mm-hmm. or someone who doesn't want to sort of work within the confines of the group.
Yeah. So one thing I've tried to arm myself with these little tactics to deal with these situations. And one of the things I do is, you know, how can I be assertive but not sound like threatening to somebody else? And I try and do that through always, like, I do extra homework before a meeting. I always come to a meeting extremely prepared so that I'm not just throwing out an opinion in a really forceful way, but I'm saying something that refers back to the pre-reading that the meeting had or the data. I'm over-prepared in a way that sometimes I don't feel like my counterparts are, but so that when I do speak, I'm able to frame it in a way that goes back to the material or the topic that we're discussing and not my own personal opinion that I'm inserting into this conversation. And so it makes it so that when I do speak up, it's framed around something more neutral and less, and it's more validated than just my opinion. And it's like a maybe a borderline coping mechanism for these situations. But
I think that's a great strategy. But it also sort of breaks my heart, right?
I know, it is
like
really
hearing
sad.
You explain this makes mm-hmm. me feel sad, because yeah.
I totally agree.
I'm going to say that I doubt any of the guys in that group are thinking
not.
About that at all.
Or they have to do that.
They don't mm-hmm. have to do it. They probably should. It would probably help them be better participants, but I bet it doesn't even cross their mind.
And I think it's like that for a lot of communities that have a historical connotations of oppression or minority perspective. You have to work, you have to go above in order to just be at the same level. And so whether that's for people of color or for women or for any of our marginalized communities, in order to be at the same level as the institutional white male system that has built the system, we have to do over preparation or be more thoughtful about how we're speaking. What's the tone of our voice? For women, maybe how high pitched are we speaking? How many likes are we using?
That upspeak thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And for other communities, it's, you know, which are we code switching? Are we speaking in our black voice or in our white voice? And mm-hmm. so always having to be mindful of these nuances and how we show up.
Amy, 27.
Do you consider yourself a feminist?
I would say yes, I would.
And what does a feminist mean to you? Like, what does the definition or the term mean to you?
To me, it's more about equality for women and women having the power and the capacity to be themselves and actually do and accomplish what they would like to in the world. And I think that, unfortunately, it's a phrase that's been co-opted by people to mean something that's very negative and not at all what was intended to.
Can you sort of expand on that? Like, what are the negative associations do you think come along with feminism?
I mean, you see a lot in pop culture today where people take it to a place of, like, angry feminists.
And do you think that in your day-to-day life you spend a lot of time thinking about, not feminism necessarily, but kind of like your role in your workplace or your relationships as a woman?
I would say yeah, absolutely. I think especially in the workplace, that's a scenario where you do look at a room and you walk into a room full of men, and especially powerful men, and you say, like, okay, you know, as a woman I have to not necessarily behave in a certain way, but there are certain expectations that come along with that. And I think that that's a challenging thing that women have to navigate in a way that men never have to.
And how do you feel about the idea, or sort of like the, I don't think the correct way to characterize it, but the idea that kind of we've reached equality. So feminism, or like the needs to champion, right, that the need for feminism is over.
I think that's ludicrous, to be honest. I think that, you know, I don't know that there is an end to a need for feminism. I think even if you do achieve, like, what would be defined as scientific or economic equality, which we are not there yet by any means, then that doesn't necessarily mean that there's any, that feminism would be dead for any reason. I still think that there's something empowering and special about that for women, and I don't think that you should have to give that up just because we make, you know, dollar for dollar what men do, which doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon.
And what do you think the big issue, if say in like the next 20 years, yeah, what the big issues are going to be for the quote-unquote feminist movement?
That's really difficult to say, because I do feel like we're at a sort of a big watershed moment for feminism in general. So I think between equal pay, reproductive rights, the way that we raise children and families in general as a society, I think is really in this big pivot point. And I can't even foresee what it would be in the future, but it does feel like it'll probably take at least 20 years to figure those things out in a way that's meaningful and actual.
Let's talk about sort of systematically some of the things that are happening in the workforce with men and women. We're, mm-hmm, we're still making less money, right? Yep. What is it, 70?
It's 77 cents.
77,
but
I'd say 76.
In my own personal experience, it's 70 cents.
Oh, so. 70 cents.
Yes.
So less for some people, more, mm-hmm, for others maybe. So it's 77 cents to the dollar. You know, women aren't in as many leadership roles. Mm-hmm. But we are having a lot of national attention brought up around this, at least, yeah, at least the conversation is there, whether or not it, yeah, means anything, right? Like Obama's talking about making,
yeah,
equal,
so,
pay,
yeah,
a really important,
yeah,
thing. Lean in, right? Yeah. We're all supposed to be leaning in.
That's right.
Do you think that's actually, you think that's helping the situation? Do you think that we're moving forward in a way, or is it just sort of talk?
I think it has to be helping.
Right.
And I think there are the haters for each of these different, there's definitely the Cheryl haters. And for anybody that is in that camp, it breaks my heart, because we're all in this together. And whether it's Lean In or Roxanne Gay or wage gap equity, whatever the tactic is, let's talk about it and let's start having the conversation, because it does help our awareness level. If we don't, yeah, start from a place of awareness, then we're kind of doomed. So we have to start from a place of awareness and then figure out what is our specific battle within each one of those discussions. I get really brokenhearted when we start to criticize how people are approaching, they're not approaching equity in the right way. And it's just like, what? So, yeah, I think it's all good.
And now here I'm going to be like, but what if some people are doing it wrong?
Well, and that's, you know, and with the Lean In thing, you hear a lot about, you know, I've read Lean In and I've had this discussion before. It's, you know, a lot of what's in that book is talking about being more like a male,
right,
in order to be successful in these situations. And what I say to that is we need to get more women into leadership roles so that we can systematically start to change culture and policy. And how can you, it's really hard to disrupt these institutionalized systems unless you play by the system in order to get there.
Yeah, because I feel like that's part of my problem with it, is that I feel like we're supposed to operate within the system that has sort of been built to view
oppress.
Us as, yeah, to oppress and to view us as second class in many ways.
Absolutely.
And aren't we just sort of playing the game if we're doing
that? I think
that?
You have to, it has to be like a multi-tiered, multi-pronged strategy. You have to have some people that are playing the game to get into the president and CEO and executive level roles, board chairs, and then they can start to institute policy and change the system within. And then you also have to have radical, like, system breakers, people who don't play by the rules and do things their way and don't pretend to be the, you know, female in a suit. You have to have the people who are doing it on both fronts.
Right.
And that's why I don't think we can criticize and judge each of the different camps, because it's a really complicated full picture for systems change. And so we need the radical people. We need the clone people. We need all the women doing the different types of nuances and this change in order to.
We need a multi-strategy approach.
That's right. We need a big game plan.
We need a big game plan. But how are we even going to have that game plan if women our age are saying that, you know, we've already got equality, it's cool. Like, in order to have that game plan, you need people who are really, you know, people like you who are thinking about it every day, who are preparing and realizing that they are.
I'm not going to get them excited about it, but maybe Beyonce will. So
maybe if Beyonce gets it together.
I mean, yeah, we need people that these cultural icons to really start bringing this up, because that is who some of these younger and younger generations will listen to. And I think as women start to, you know, it's hard because millennials are whoever's going to be digital natives next, whatever the youngest generation
is. I think they might be called plurals.
There's
an intern on our show who's 18. She's lovely. She's very young. And she said the word plurals. I was like, I don't even know that. I'm so old.
Oh,
I don't even know what the next thing is.
Yeah. Well, the plurals, I mean, whatever this young generation is, we're going to need them to realize the importance of this work before they're forced to realize the importance of it, before they start to experience inequity.
That's a big thing. People are, you know, who millennials who came into this, probably a lot of them, if they didn't have parents or sort of role models who talked a lot about feminism and equal rights, they didn't think about it until they realized in a job, my coworker is making more than me.
Yeah, or that they're getting better opportunities, or that they are, you know, you start to see that there's this kind of male culture. And a lot of women have learned how to be successful in certain situations by learning how to talk about sports or by joining in on the company fantasy football team.
Code switch.
Yep, this code switching. And a lot of and it's really prominent in the marketing and advertising industries, and I'm sure in all other industries too. But I think that if you're not real, if you don't have the awareness to realize that that code switching is a form of inequity and that you're that you're not, and you know, in the nonprofit sector, this is totally different. I hear a lot of my men friends who are in the nonprofit sector say that, well, it's a female dominated industry. There's nothing but tons of women working in nonprofits, but it's not like that. If you look at the executive director level, if you look at who's making up the board, if you're really looking at the decision makers, it's not heavy female.
And that comes into like a whole different issue of women being willing to take roles that pay them less money.
Yeah.
And a lot of
lot of my women friends who are in the nonprofit sector say that they're so thankful that their husbands have such great corporate jobs so that they can have these nonprofit jobs.
Yep.
And that's a whole other pay issue that I have that's existing in the nonprofit sector that's not, or, you know, women are able to take these jobs that pay less because they don't, whether they don't value their pay to be at that level. They do have these male counterpart husbands that make enough to supplement and their to supplement their income. That pay issue is a really big thing that not enough women talk about. That's part of this feminist discussion.
Yeah, I mean, the talking about the pay thing is huge too, because I think we are, as a culture, I don't even think this is an issue of feminism. As a culture, we're brought up not to talk about
salaries. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I did a survey, my own little personal Jamie survey a few years ago, and asked everybody, how much do you make?
Right.
And we need to start, we need to break this, I call the salary silence. And until we start really talking about how much we make, how much experience do we have that's equaling that, why can't we be transparent about this and help peer advocate for each other and peer support? The whole thing's very weird to me that we don't talk about it.
Yeah. I read recently some tech article, an article about a tech company, which, you know, have their own issues in terms of male, women makeup that are being totally transparent and listing everyone's salary.
Yeah.
On a board in the office, which is crazy.
I know.
Yeah, but see, like, it freaks you out a little bit.
But nobody, that kind of transparency is radical.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I sort of want to bring this out of the office place for a second, too, because you brought up, and just looking at young people and kind of what's going to happen to move us forward and how is that happening, the Beyonce leadership we need. In terms of pop culture, I wonder, I think a lot about how the internet has changed feminism. Like the way that social media and the way we all get our entertainment and information has shaped our ideas of feminism and the role that plays.
Yep. That's a huge, you know, I think I was just thinking about this a lot recently because one of the hats that we didn't put out or out that I wear a lot of is I'm a female gamer.
Oh,
and so
that's interesting.
Yes, it's a whole other show. But this idea of females in the gaming world have been experiencing this internet, what's happening with the internet and talking about feminism on the internet. This female sub gaming culture has been going through that for years and talking about that online and discussing it. And it's kind of coming to a head right now in a lot of different mainstream ways and publications, and things are, you know, these death threats for female gamers is really kind of on trend now in a way that even though it's been existing for years, but it's these cultural icons and these mainstream icons like Roxanne and Beyonce are starting to make, I think, these internet women feel a little bit less lonely or something. It's like we have more of a community and we get to see these advocates for ourselves.
Yeah. I guess that's probably because the internet traditionally when it started was made up of young men.
Yeah.
Right? Like the sort of forefronts of gaming and tech and all of that was men. So women really had not as much of a place in that industry.
No. And there's whenever stuff starts to change the status quo, you're going to have people that don't want that to be changed.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot on the internet.
You mentioned something about gamers getting death threats.
Yes.
Why does that happen? And what is that about?
I mean, you know what? Here, I have a whole other theory about this, but so females who are really prominent in the gaming community are just so flamed and so trolled and there's a female really prominent icon in the female gaming community going to go speak at a conference. If you come and speak at this conference, we will kill you. You know, this like it's the type of
Because they're like encroaching in traditionally male space, or what's it about?
And it's because, you know, a lot of people devalue female ability in gaming because they say that they're females, because that they are given special treatment by other players, especially this is really in the online gaming community and not necessarily in individual console play. But if you're playing in kind of any type of massive multiplayer online situation and you're a female, a lot of my co-female gamer friends, they will use voice masking programs. They won't speak if they're playing online. They don't want their identity to be revealed that they're a female because of this type of hate that will start to come towards them. And especially if your skill level is at an equitable level to the men. There's a lot of men who really respect female gamers. My husband is one of them. He's huge, respectful, and values and just as if I was a guy, if I beat him in a game, he doesn't have any hard thing with it. So it's not all male gamers by any means. But so just as much as there are these females that are really good, there are also females who use their gender in a way to get special treatment and to kind of entice men in order to be treated in a certain way that benefits their gaming.
Oh, but here, isn't this you now playing the card of
that's what men, yeah.
Oh,
this is what men say. This is what's happening. And that makes them overall hate any woman who has become successful because they feel like she has used her sexuality to get that success as opposed to her actual raw skill. That's why women mask their identity so that idea of sexuality is taken out of the equation.
It makes me so angry, like viscerally angry hearing that.
You should come out to drinks with me and my friends and my female gamer friends and we can all rage about this.
I mean, that's just insane, especially because the system that has been created has put us in a place where woman's worth is supposed to be tied to that sexuality and that attract. Like, that is the value that you're allowed to bring.
Male media has created that.
Of course, right, absolutely. But then men throw that in women's face. And there's also this bigger, this whole bigger conversation that could go on for like days about the idea of sexuality and women being put up on a pedestal as sexual mm-hmm. items. But actually, their sexual desire is yeah. really terrifying to men in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so while it's really prominent in the gaming culture, it's not unique to the gaming culture. You see the same type of treatment in the office place, especially if you have women who do dress a certain way. Their skills are not necessarily always credited
right.
for how far they get along or for their successes or accomplishments or why they were put on that project.
Molly Tolens, and I am 27 years old.
Do you think about being a feminist or the idea of feminism in your daily life, like in your work life or your personal relationships?
I guess I think about it a lot at work because I think I am in medicine and it is a male-dominated field. But I don't think about it in a very... I guess I'm just busy at work a lot, and so when something occurs to me, such as... that resident who is a male did not treat me very nicely. I don't necessarily do anything about it.
If you think about inequality, what do you think are the biggest issues in terms of inequality between men and women?
Attitude towards women in places of power. So I think that women who are in situations where they have power either in the workplace or I guess mostly in the workplace are the attitudes towards them is mostly negative in my experience.
What's negative about them? Like, is the perception of them different, or...?
Yes. Like, I think a man in a situation... I'm going to talk about my field again, but...
No, you should.
So, like, a resident or a doctor in, like, a chief position or whatever, a lot of times is given... a male in this position is given a lot of cred and, you know, people... there's a lot of respect towards that position, whereas a woman in that position is often ridiculed or... people talk about like why, like how she got there and what sort of negative things she had to do to get there, whereas a man is just given credit and sort of respect for being in that position without a lot of questions of how they achieved that position.
Do you think that those, like the issues that we face in inequality or that you see as being barriers to like in your personal life are going to change in the next couple of decades? Like, do you see there being progress made or sort of not at all?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of progress being made. I think that women are taking a lot of positions of power, and even though there's a lot of negative attitudes towards them still at this point, I mean, the reality is we are assuming a lot of those roles and we're taking up, we're becoming more of 50% of the workforce, I think. So I think the attitude is changing because there's more of us. We're taking positions of power and just numbers. There's enough of us that I think it's changing. I still think it's hard because a lot of the, especially more old school, again, in medicine, like old school fields are still, the top of the echelon is still male dominated, but those people are retiring or dying. So things are moving in positive ways, I think.
This podcast specifically is looking at Minnesota,
yeah,
right?
And next. Sort
of right, Minnesota next, the future
yeah.
of Minnesota. And the way that these different trends and themes sort of play out in Minnesota. And in some ways we have a history of being, you know, more socially progressive, I mm-hmm. think, than other states and other parts of the country. Do you think that we are in sort of a leadership role in terms of women's rights nationwide? Do you think that in the future we are going to be a pioneering state?
I mean, we absolutely could. I mean, look at Amy, right? Amy Klobuchar is just a huge... We have several leaders here that are pioneers in their own right. Amy, another one of my favorite heroes is Jennifer Forbereedy. She's the president of the Bush Foundation. And so you are, you know, I think that Minnesota does have some females in really prominent, visible leadership roles in a way that I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure other, I mean, I've lived in, I'm not from Minnesota, I'm from Texas. But I really do value that about our community here. I also think that Minnesota, if we look to the future for Minnesota, we have if you look at the way our population trends are going, along with that, how it's matched with the types of jobs and the skills that we're going to need in our future, we have a crisis on hand. We have an attraction and retention of talent crisis in Minnesota. And what role do our minority communities, female and racial, play in solving that equation, as opposed to just looking at recruiting other really talented white men from other communities to come here and fill these problems, is going to be an interesting challenge for Minnesota. But I'm really optimistic that we have smart people that are going to be working on this and able to start addressing how we are really growing our local talent here to really be a thriving metropolitan. I mean, I feel like everybody should move to MSP. We should all live here. So,
yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Please, all outstate friends, come to Minneapolis.
Yeah, and we have our challenges. We absolutely have our challenges. But I think that a lot of stuff's moving in the right direction.
You know, if there is still this stigma around feminism today, mm-hmm. if people are still starting their interviews by saying, I'm not a feminist, but, you know, is that stigma ever going to go away, do you think? Like, I'm very vocal about the fact that I'm a feminist.
Yeah.
But even, you know, in my personal relationship, sometimes my boyfriend, I can see that it like puts him a little on edge.
Yeah.
Even though he's a feminist, he's a good guy. But, you know, is that going to disappear? Is there ever going to be a time in which women can stand up and be like, I'm a feminist, and there's not going to be someone who recoils from it?
I think that if that recoiling did disappear, we would no longer have a need for that term. Like, the term would become extinct because it would no longer have power. And if it no longer has power, that means the problem has been solved. So I think as long as we have a problem of inequity that demands feminism to exist, there will be conflict and discomfort and a debate around this term feminism. Mm. And as long as until the problem goes away, that's going to exist. And once the problem goes away, we won't need to call ourselves feminists. We just will be humans.
I guess that's true. And I mean, do you think the problem's going to go away, though?
It's hard to imagine. I'm trying to, you know, this seems like if we go back to, I mean, think about how institutionalized this is, and that the reason we have original sin is because Eve took the apple. You know, it's, you know, you go back to these really rooted concepts and notions that are very historical, and even before modern Christianity and before any of this, any religious dogma, these are really rooted concepts that I can't imagine us reaching a place of equity anytime soon, unless we all morph into one gender and one race. But
right.
Until that happens, I don't see us ever being a society where there aren't these issues of equity around race and gender.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm even doubtful we'll have a female president in my lifetime.
Don't even get me started.
We can't go down
that
road.
We have to have a female president, and I hope it's soon.
Yeah, but who knows, right? Yeah. I mean, so if this is going to continue, we'll probably get past some of these things, right? Like, I'm hopeful that sometime in my life, or if I have children, my children's life, equal pay will be less of a concern, right? Mm-hmm. That we'll get past that, that maybe we'll stop some of the slut shaming that exists. But there are going to be other things. I mean, if you're looking forward, what do you think could be some of the issues that feminists as a whole, put that in quotes because now it sounds like an army, are going to be taking on? Like, what do you think are going to be the big issues in the future in terms of equality?
You know, I think that you know, and this is just something I think about a lot personally, but I think there's something around, and it gets, you know, it's part of pay and those issues, but around how does our, what does it look like to be a real female leader and to be able to be an empathetic leader and a kind leader and not this assertive, aggressive, not to be a female leader that is masking herself in these male characteristics.
Unless that's who you are as a person.
Unless that's who your personality. Unless that's your authentic self, absolutely. Right, right. But to also have room for leadership that is authentic, that also embraces these stereotypical female traits. And I think that that's going to be one thing that I am really intentional about and try to be focused about, is what does it look like to be, to get my way when I need to get my way, but to also do it in a way that's kind and empathetic, and to be this, to feel like I can be my whole self when I show up in work, or when I show up in life, and when I show up to just try and not to have to code switch so much. And I think that that's going to be, it's a hard issue to articulate. It doesn't sound as like packaged as equal pay.
Equal pay or domestic violence or anything like that.
Yep.
Right?
And it's, but I think that it's, and it's probably in a lot of ways not as extreme as domestic violence and equal pay. But once we have, once we're able to not have to code switch as females and still be these authentic leaders, then we're going to have reached something that's really beautiful and I'm really excited for. And I hope that that's what my daughter is able to experience and how she's able to show up. You know, I was told early on advice, you know, you need to be a head on a box. And I hope that my daughter can be her whole self and also be respected as a leader.
From one feminist to another, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it.